Welcome back to Tabu. My name's Katrina. Today I'm joined with a very special guest, Beth Fisher from Bridging Commercial. And back in the studio again, we've got Nick Russell from Tab. Should we start with saying hi? Introduce yourself, Nick. Start.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even introduce me, but Nick Russell, sales director of Tab, back on the podcast after a few weeks off. Very excited to be here.
And I'm Beth Fisher. I'm the publishing director of MediaNet Publishing. We run a number of media titles in the specialist finance space. So Bridging Commercial, as Katrina kindly mentioned at the beginning, and Development Finance Today, and also a print Bridging and Commercial magazine.
We'll go into a bit more about them shortly. Today's episode is going to be on property finance and the media, and we'll kick things off with question number one, which is, what does the role of media have in property finance?
I think in a nutshell, it's to basically inform all parties in the transaction chain in the specialist finance market about what's happening in the industry. So, you know, it could be anything from, you know, new faces at different companies. So BDMs, credit underwriters, just so that our brokers know who to contact, know who to get in, know who to chat to, new products, case studies, like basically how a product works in our space, and you know, anything and everything, data, which is pretty scarce in this space, and a range of products. So yeah, everything. But I think the one thing which we like to do is make sure that we're educating brokers. Mm-hmm. So the majority of our readership are specialist finance brokers and mortgage brokers who potentially could be looking at specialist finance for the first time. So while our readership are experienced, and we don't want to, you know, patronize our readers by saying like, this is what bridging is, we do like to put it in a way that is in layman's terms for anyone who's just entering the space and want to know a bit more about it, and, you know, expand their toolkit of options for their clients.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so you kind of mentioned specialist lenders. Would there ever be an opportunity that you'd go beyond that and start being a resource for everyone in property or everyone in finance, or do you kind of have an aim just to remain sector specific for us, I guess?
Yeah, I think we don't want to be too wide, and I think some publications can fall into the trap where you publish everything and anything and everything in the finance space. Our bread and butter is bridging and commercial finance. And then on our Development Finance Today publication, it's property development finance. So it is what it says on the tin. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to go too wide where we're not specialists in what we do. We know this market inside out. People come to us for that content and they don't go to other publications for bridging finance news because they know that we have the inside scoop of everything. We do publish the most breaking news. We get all the exclusives, we get all the scoops, and we understand, we meet everyone. So any new broker, developer, lender in our space, we like to meet and understand like, how their business works, what they're offering that's different, mm-hmm. Which a lot of the time isn't a huge amount because it's so competitive right now. So
at least
I feel
we've got a lot to write already, hey?
Yeah, we've got a lot. We saying that, there is room. So we used to run development finance news on BNC. So we launched BNC in 2008 as a result of the financial crisis. And that was, you know, an area where bridging started booming because no mainstream banks were lending. So it was a great time to start that publication. And then we launched DFT in 2014. But previously we ran development finance news on that site. We do the same on BNC where there's some other products in the specialist market which we run. Potentially we could produce something separate later in the year or early next mm-hmm. year. So there is definitely, expansion plans for us, which is exciting. But we do want to keep it very niche. So you're not going to see us run mainstream mortgage news anytime soon.
Hold on. So how many lenders were there in the industry when you set up in 2008? How many were actually either left, which probably none, and how many had sort of spawned from that in its sort of early phases of bridging coming back to life, shall we say?
Yeah, I mean, this is
and obviously the rates back then as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely different. I mean, I joined in beginning of 2014, late 2013. So I didn't start from the beginning, but I do know from looking at the website from back then, it was a very, very different website we had, very, very clunky. And we had some advertisers which actually still with us today, which is amazing. But yeah, there was probably under 10 at that time. I know that, you know, you had the likes of Together, Mast Haven back then. And you know, sadly, Mast Haven is no longer lending in our space anymore. But that was... That's quite an interesting kind of comparison. Since, I mean, it's countless. There's lenders I still come across like on a weekly basis, which I've never heard of before,
come
up in conversation. Yeah, a lot of these kind of smaller lenders are, you know, family offices that don't really have a brand, so they're just lending. It's more like a lifestyle lending proposition. So it's really hard, and because there's no data in our space, really, it's really hard to actually say how many. But I mean, I would say there's a good 150, I'd say, that are, you know, lending a decent amount.
Just on bridging.
Yeah, in bridging. And we probably talk to just shy of 100 of them. Yeah, so it's a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. The differentiating them is difficult. You know, the challenge at TAB has always been, what are we doing differently to make people want to come to us? Particularly in a time, probably in the last year or two, where we've been at a race to the bottom in terms of rates, which I'm sure you've seen massively, people coming out at lower rates, which has been great for borrowers. I know I've sort of kind of segued a bit, but I think that kind of moves a little bit to with interest rate rises, and let's see what happens now with how lenders view the market moving forward, because they're not going to swallow the cost of, you know, additional cost to their own business with rate rises.
Well, the rates back then, like in, I guess, 2008 time, it was, especially in 2013, it was mainly, you know, it wasn't that far off 2%. It was like, you know, 1.5% plus. And now, you know, you're seeing lenders out at 0.4.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
It's like commercial finance.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember asking, I think it was a couple of years ago when the bank rate started rising, I remember asking the bridging market lenders in particular, you know, how is this going to affect your business? And no, all the bridging lenders said, it's not, like, it doesn't affect us, like, this won't. But I don't know if it is going to now. They're looking at it. Commercial, 100%, you know, fixed pricing is something that commercial mortgage brokers are really looking at, and that will definitely continue, especially in development space. Actually, a really interesting roundtable with 10 development lenders, including with TAB,
our own Ellie Corman.
Exactly.
Plug in Ellie.
So that was a really interesting discussion on the kind of high inflationary environment we're in, and, you know, rising interest rates, and how that will impact the development market, which will be massive, I think, over the next couple of years. So bridging, I'm not sure. It's so short term, and it's not serviced in the main. It's hard to see what impact it will have, but definitely on the exit side. You know?
Yeah, I'm just thinking more in terms of cost of capital where someone's writing business now. You know, if their own funding lines are linked to variable rates, and you know, that could have an impact even over a short period of time. And my view of the market is, everyone's trying to grab market share. Is how many people are grabbing market share on thin margins, and how much of those thin margins get made almost too thin to be actually profitable.
Yep.
That's where I can see maybe an impact on lenders overall.
Yeah.
In a short term.
Yeah, I mean, this has been an argument that we've been saying, you know, we've been behind for a long time, is, you know, how profitable are some of the bridging lenders in our space? Are they offering another product like a buy-to-let or a longer-term mortgage? And the bridging isn't profitable, but it's like with hopes that they'd go onto their more like life cycle product offering. But from the amount that I'm hearing, you know, of brokers getting, you know, up to 2% commission fee, and the product interest rate's so low, and they're doing so much business on that side, I'm thinking, how are they actually making any money? Yeah. but, you know, we'll see. The writing is on the wall.
I hope they all are, because you want people to keep a profitable business, and, you know, healthy competition is always good competition. It keeps all of us on our toes to be innovative, which is only going to benefit brokers for choice and benefit borrowers in terms of their ability to borrow cheaper, which means hopefully they can extract more profit themselves, which ultimately means they end up doing more projects, which will mean they'll end up borrowing more from more lenders.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just, you know, the life cycle of our industry, I suppose.
Exactly. I think it's always a good thing for the competition, and I hope that continues. It's just as long as it does remain profitable, because if it doesn't, then that's no good for the customer at the end of the day if a lender has to pull out of the market.
And employment as well for the industry. I mean,
yeah.
Okay. We segued massively.
I like segueing. This is kind of more, you mentioned when you joined the market, but how did you get into property finance journalism?
So I'll probably step back in terms of how I got into journalism in the first place. So I remember, I think I was about 13 at school, and there was one of those kind of like job fair days when you like go around and everyone has like their own like stat. It's like an expert.
I went straight to the fighter pilot. I'm like,
yeah. I think it was a construction stand or something like that. And I was like, this looks cool. It was really cool. Like everyone like had all their gear on for different jobs and like just gave you leaflets and talked about certain things. And I remember walking past a broadcast. I always wanted to be a teacher. So before, I used to like pretend to have do school at home with my little brother, and I like taught him maths and stuff. Yeah, obviously had a register. That was the best part. So I used to always want to be a teacher. And then I went to this jobs day thing, and there was a broadcast like a TV newsroom like set up. And you had the camera and you had everything on the screen, and you had to basically read a news bulletin out. And I loved it. I was like in my element. And I don't know why. I just really enjoyed it. I loved reading. I loved writing. And I just thought, actually, this would be really fun. And since then it stuck. And I was like, I want to be in journalism, but I thought I'd want to be in broadcast.
Yeah.
And English was one of those subjects which I found I didn't ever need to revise for or like try hard in, but I always got really good grades. Everything else I was like average at best at. But this one I was like, oh, I would just rock up to the exam and it was fine. Like, and that to me, that was really comfortable and I loved it. So easy life. So I just thought, you know, put the two together. And I studied journalism at uni, did broadcasts in the first year in radio, actually was better at radio than broadcast, found broadcast quite hard because you had to do all the technical bits as well. You have to do everything.
Oh.
And it wasn't really my kind of forte. I was like, actually, I'm better at writing. I don't want to help with the cameras and everything else. I just just want to write. So I focused more on prints and radio, and then went more into print and online. And then we actually created our own B2B magazine. I think it was called The Baking Sheets for like independent bakery businesses. We actually won an award for it. I was really excited. We didn't do a dissertation. It was create a magazine, and our team created that, and it was awesome. And then I interned, and this was my like first like proper job in journalism. So I worked at Ideal Home interning, and also at some wedding magazines, some more like lifestyle kind of publications. Always wanted to work on a mag. I found it quite fluffy. It was a lovely environment. It was fun, but I was like, I actually want to write about something quite meaty. And then I saw this job role advertised, and I thought, finance. Never thought I'd be in finance. What the hell is bridging? Yeah. I remember asking my partner, his dad is a surveyor, and I was like, what is bridging? And he still says it to this day. He's like, do you remember that time when you asked me what bridging was because you were like applying for this role? So didn't know it. And most people, I think, do fall into finance.
I definitely did.
Yeah.
I didn't know what bridging was before I started at West One.
Right.
almost 10 years ago.
Yeah,
I had to find out what bridging level was before I even after got offered the job. I don't know how I got in.
Wow.
Don't tell Duncan that.
Do you know it now, though?
Still learning.
We all are, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you, Katrina?
Tab you for that, Nick. fell into finance, definitely. And then my previous job was in kind of property development finance. Then came to Tab also kind of a bit like bridging, but sort of having a general idea, and then wrote a couple of blogs and realised, it all clicks, it all falls into place now.
Yeah, I think the good thing when I joined, we had more publications back then. We had, you know, Loan Talk and Debt Management Today we were writing for, and we had a range
sounds
of
fun.
it was great. I love Loan Talk. I love the second charge mortgage space. That market is so fun. Still talk to quite a lot of the people from that space, even though we stopped publishing that. Because they're in a lot of the lenders that are around today. That was fun. We did a really cool awards for that publication each year. But what I found when I first joined as a reporter, so I've done pretty much every role in our company on the editorial side, which is good. It's actually really useful because when we recruit new people, I know
definitely
the roles.
Yeah.
So I know, like, if they come to me like, oh, someone's pulled out this and I've got a deadline, blah, blah, blah. I know the pain of that, so I can understand it. And I also know, like, where, like, there's, like, easier ways to do things. So I find that quite useful. When I joined as a reporter, sorry, I'm waffling. I joined as a reporter and I found the industry so welcoming and just lovely that you could literally, and I think it's also, not looking at a negative, but it's very ego-driven. It's very egocentric. So people love to talk about themselves, love to talk about the companies they work at, and love to talk about their journeys. So if I had a question about anything, something really basic, because I was new to the finance industry, I'd call someone up and be like, can you just explain this to me? And they'd love to talk about it because it was great. So you know what? Anyone who's interested in financial journalism, it is a great industry. Your no day is the same. It's constantly changing, especially in today's environment. And I've been saying that for like 5 years. People do help and they do give. And I've still got people that I talk to, you know, from day one today who, like, I'm really good friends with. And, like, I can know that I can call them up and trust, you know, their insight into the market. Yeah. And that, you know, that can come to fruition some great stories.
Good. Brilliant.
Question number three.
That was a really long-winded answer.
No. How do you keep content engaging across print, digital, and social media?
So we have a social media manager. It's kind of a luxury in the trade press, but that's something which we definitely think is important to make sure that we're engaging our readership and not just talking about us, but talking about kind of wider issues and what we're discussing, mainly in the magazine. Online, especially during the pandemic, we did a lot of virtual roundtables. Yeah. We were doing one a week for the whole of last year. Wow. It was pretty wild. Yeah, yeah.
Big bill.
It's tiring. But it was good. And they were, you know, our audience were really engaged with that, with loads of questions. I remember we did one on student accommodation. And that one was just wild. We had so many questions. We couldn't get through them all. And that's the sort of thing we love to do. We want to make sure that it's completely engaged. My phone's going off. Should I wait?
Is it vibrating?
Okay. Anyway, stop and stop. So online, it's really doing these kind of virtual as well as in-person roundtable events. We're doing these, you know, breakfast clubs and supper clubs. And we get really good content from those, mixing up roundtables. Also just expanding who we talk to, not talking to the same company. Yeah. So for example, the roundtable we did yesterday, there were some new faces I hadn't met before. Tertiary companies. So it's not just, we're not just talking to lenders. We're not just talking to brokers. We've got, you know, project monitors on there, developers. You've got your brokers. You've got everyone on there. And that's where you get the differences of opinion. So we want to make sure that our articles are really representative of the industry, and that includes diversity as well. So making sure that it's not just the same type of people.
Yeah.
How innovative do you think companies are in our space in working with you? Sort of, I've always felt that kind of property's always been a bit behind the curve in terms of how innovative and creative it is regarding its marketing, its socials and
careful,
content.
Mate.
Except Tab, obviously. I mean, look where we are right now. Just want to know where you think, if you think we're lagging behind as an industry, are we on point, or where we can improve in terms of working with media companies for promotion, for marketing, and just general innovation?
Yeah, I think, without being too harsh, I think as a whole, the industry is probably a little bit behind in terms of what they could do, what the options are. But that's also on like us as a media company, and obviously the other side of the business, which is marketing and presenting those ideas, which I think we do well. But that's something which, you know, always like show what opportunities there are. But there are some companies, you know, including yourselves, which really know how to do it, and they know how to, you know, get their brand across in an informative way and an engaging way, and attracting new audiences, because it's something that's important to us, is to attract the next generation of brokers and property developers. That's really key for us. So, you know, you have to be looking at where we're putting our socials, what we stand for. We've put a lot of work in that, in terms of, you know, we rebranded to MediaNet Publishing in February this year, and over the last few months there's been a lot of kind of internal structuring, restructuring, and that's been really helpful to no one can see that, but you know, we've got the messaging right, we feel, in terms of what we stand for and what we want to do as a business. So yeah, there's some companies that do it really well. You know, I've got a really cool kind of filmed round table, or not round table, filmed interview this Friday, and they're going to be using that as like a disruptive website takeover. So there's actually an interview, things like that, which you can't, like, it's just, it's so simple to do, but it just makes, it's more engaging than just the, you know, pop-up banner and that's it. I think there's three parts of marketing. You know, you've got consistent marketing, you've got banner advertising, you've got your solus emails, direct marketing. That's all kind of like just to make sure you've got a consistent brand out there. But then you've got the disruptive side of it, where you can do something really different. I find in the print magazine, I'm constantly coming up with ideas, and I'm just hoping someone like takes a really cool idea. But it's always, I feel like most people stick with the standard. Oh, I'll just have a double page spread. I'll just have a full page. Just have a half page. I'm like, you can put a free like gift on there, or you can do like a pop up. You can do cutouts on it. You know, you've got perfume ads in like a magazine, and it's glossy and it's thick. Do something like that. Here you go, Tab's new perfume. No. But you could do something where you've got a thicker stock, or you've got really innovative wraparound ads. And I just think there's so much you can do. And we've got so many ideas, because I collect magazines. It's like a big passion of mine. And I see the really cool marketing in them. I'm like, we should be doing this as an industry. Yeah. Like, we, and because it's so competitive right now, and because everyone's offering very similar products, very similar, you know, flexibility, speed, service, it's the same thing that everyone says. To differentiate your marketing and how you produce your socials is so key. Like, it's just, that's really the way to push it out to brokers. And if you do something really different, and it's not even that much different in price, really, when you're looking at it, you're going to stand out. So I just think we, as an industry as a whole, there's definitely more which we can do.
Room for improvement.
Yeah, definitely.
And following on from that, how would you say now the industry's changed in the way it's consuming its media? You know, is there much more of a move toward video content than there ever was? Because let's face it, we're all on our phones looking at Instagram, YouTube, all the rest of it. Everyone likes a quick 30-second video. It seems to be the way people want to take quick information.
Yeah.
And I'm putting words in your mouth there. I'm just making an assumption, probably based on what I like to consume.
Yeah.
But just generally, obviously, where it was all just read, and some banner ads, which is what the website was before, you know, the innovation of new media. How do you think what we're consuming most, and two, what sort of news do people enjoy reading the most on, particularly on BNC?
Yeah.
What gets the most hits?
Yeah, well, in terms of what gets the most hits, people love to see where people have moved in the industry.
Okay,
they love it. They want to know who's who. It's a very
gossip, isn't it?
It is. It's gossip. They love it's a relationship led business,
yep,
and
agreed.
It's based on trust, this industry. So they need to know who the people are. So definitely, you know, key hires. I mean, the story yesterday with Gavin, who's going to see Spring Finance from UTB, you know, that did really well. we knew that would.
Yeah, I mean, look, Gavin is a very respected person in the industry. He's been at, what, how long is he in UTB? 8 to 10 years. I mean, he was UTB through and through.
Exactly.
So that was big news.
Exactly. And that's the sort of thing which does get the clicks. I know, and also it seems like everyone wants to know what's happening at Spring Finance, but the Andrew Bloom story, it was a profile piece and it was all about his career to date, you know, how he started Masthaven with, I think it was 50K. And that's what people love. The aspirational stories are really interesting in that. It's an entrepreneurial market. So that's something they love. So we're definitely putting, you know, more kind of profile features out of like how people got into the industry. So like these kind of conversations. humans. People like that's the human touch to it, which, you know, this industry talks about all the time. So that's definitely something which people talk about. And we get lots of clicks on, as well as like the in-depth features. So in the magazine, you know, we write really in-depth stories. They're 4,000 words plus on something very niche. So I've been doing the PI crisis in the surveyor market for the last 18 months, and that's been a series we've been putting in the magazine, and that's got a lot of traction just because it's affecting so many in the bridging space. So yeah, it's the very in-depth stuff, and then the kind of entrepreneurial. Who's who in the market? I think it's gets the most clicks. And then in terms of how our readers consume news and just in general, and you were saying with video content, I think this is the TikTok trend. You know, it's I can't watch anything more than a minute or 30 seconds anymore. And it is, I think it's quite worrying, actually.
Yeah.
I have tried to refrain from using TikTok that much as a result.
We're trying to get onto TikTok, well, slowly.
I'm not even on it.
Well, yet, Nick.
Yet, obviously.
I mean, we're not on it in terms of as a business, but it might be something which we look at. I think, yeah, it's just, we never went on Facebook. It just wasn't for us. We're on Instagram and we're on Twitter and LinkedIn. But LinkedIn's probably the biggest social channel for us just because it's
where
B2B.
Where everyone is.
Yes. Yeah, everyone's on there.
People again, it's the people
to people
thing. They
kind of get their news there as well as then from the kind of outlets. You kind of get both.
Yeah, also the wet shares, just by liking or sharing or commenting, anyone who you're linked with will pop up on their feed because someone's liked or commented. It's the best way to...
Yeah, spread that network.
Yeah, exactly.
It is, it's really true. And I feel, I mean, definitely from looking at like our analytics in terms of our readership, there's definitely been a rise in mobile users rather than desktop, which was probably the predominant way that people looked at news. You know, everyone's in an office and they're like, oh, I'm having a lunch break. I just want to see like who's doing what lender-wise, and they'll look on B&C. I feel like more people are out and about, and they're, especially now when you're allowed to, people don't want to be in the office. They want to be on their phone and out, you know, meeting people. So we do have a rise in people using their phones to consume news, which again means that as media outlets, we need to make sure that our user experience is top notch. So that's something which we're constantly looking at and
then
wanting to improve.
The print mag has kind of just been about, I can't remember when you started it again, but it's, you know, how's that going? That's looking...
Yeah, we just...
Through, what, yes, the other week.
So it's bi-monthly. Yeah, it was last week it came out. It's bi-monthly, which we won't change because... Well, for any time soon, just because there's a lot of content in there. It takes a lot of time to put together, and we don't want to reduce that. We want it to be, you know, a meaty read. So that will stay as it is. But we are, you know, we're working with some really talented freelance journalists who write for some amazing financial national publications. We also have our, you know, senior reporter Andrea, who's amazing, and we're looking to almost double the team this year, so the editorial team in-house, so we've got loads of resource for that. We went backwards because obviously we started online and then went into print, and most people start in print and then go online, so we did kind of probably what you shouldn't do, but we've been profitable since year one. And I believe I'm a big reader of magazines. I collect them, as I mentioned earlier, and I just love the tactile element of having a magazine, flicking through it. Even if you're at work and on your desk and you've got it there, and you're like, oh, who lends in Northern Ireland? And then, you know, there's a feature in there about Northern Ireland bridging. It's such a useful tool of finding companies and people and just learning about the industry. The education side is really key for us. Mm-hmm. And that's why we always try and get a wide range of people involved in it. So each issue will have different people in there. So it really is a tool that every broker should have on their desk. And we want it to be a coffee table book. So when you go into like a bank or a lender or a broker's office, it's there like in the middle. It's the prime one. And that's what we wanted to create, something which doesn't look like a trade publication. We wanted to break the mold of what trade press is. And bring something that's completely new. And I find that, you know, we work with our photographers, does London Fashion Week, for example. Like he's an amazing photographer, and it's not just, you know, men in suits on the front cover and that's it, or throughout the magazine. We want like innovative photography, illustrations, like I commission those all across the world. So we get some really cool designers. Our designer's amazing, our graphic designer. We wanted something that's different, and that's the only real way to go into print mm-hmm. at this day and age. It needs to be a really niche publication mm-hmm. that doesn't do everything. It does something very specific. You know the market inside out, and it looks good. Like, yeah, it has to look great. Good.
Agreed.
Thank you.
No, I agreed, but it has to look good.
Moving on to question four, I mean, we kind of touched on it, but how do you see the media market changing over the next 5 years? And I guess that's from the way people consume media, the way, I guess, looking back on the past 5 years, how it's changed. I mean, maybe 5 years is because even in the past 18 months, it's all changed.
It's definitely changed. I mean, yeah, like you say, over the last, like, you know, during the pandemic, we didn't want to go from, we didn't want to stop our print publication, but we knew a lot of businesses were getting their magazines to their offices, and if people were working from home, who was reading it? Yeah. So we actually went through this whole process where we were basically advertising to change your address, because you can do it easily online, it takes like 2 seconds, change your address to your personal address or somewhere else, or get it forwarded to your personal address. And we did. We pretty much got like everyone to like change over where they get their magazines. So it meant that people still got the magazine throughout the pandemic, and we didn't stop an issue. And that was something we were really proud of. Mm. So that was a weird thing where we had to kind of think on our feet, which most companies in our space had to do. So that was that. And on top of that, you know, we couldn't get photographers out. We couldn't do like interviews face to face. So it was, you know, a lot of Zooms, a lot of back to back stuff like that. We got illustrators to create really cool things for us to make sure that the magazine still kept its, you know, high quality in terms of design. So that was something which we innovated in the last 2 years or so. In terms of the last 5 years, I think it's really, again, about user experience, you know, websites. We rebranded our websites, completely overhauled them in 2017, I think it was. Definitely it's time to relook at that, something which we'd love to do. So that will be on the cards, or is on the cards.
Would you consider getting an app?
We actually used to have an app. It's funny you say that. We actually had a conversation with Mo, who's the founder of our business, not that long ago, about potentially bringing the app back. Yeah. It wasn't really highly used back then, and it was actually quite a lot of work to get it to work how we wanted it to work. So it was just one of those things where we have, but we never really mm-hmm. promoted it or did too much with it. But now that we're seeing more people consume their news on their phone, and most lenders in our space are using apps, it is something which we are considering to bring back. So yeah,
what about watch getting the old broadcasting, hey, some television?
As long as I don't have to work the camera, then
we can help you.
YouTube channel for your video content?
So we have a YouTube channel for both of our sites. It's something which I guess we don't have like a dedicated schedule, like every week, like you guys do. Every week we have something on there, but it's as and when we have news content that we want to produce. It's an investment in the business that I'd love to take it. Video content does well on our sites, so yes, we'd love to.
What about a BNC podcast?
So this has literally
and
been...
Can I be the first guest?
You can.
Thank you.
It's been on the cards for ages. I would love to do a podcast.
Yeah, I'm surprised you actually haven't got one.
I know. Well, we did one together, didn't we?
That was great because we sort of did a whole day of 15 separate podcasts. It was like the everlasting podcast.
It was intense, yeah.
It was good. I'm just surprised because I think, you know, if you asked anyone to come on, they would feel that they're going to get... They'll get almost not national. They'll get, for our industry, it's basically national coverage.
Yeah.
So I think you'd do really well out of that.
I think so. It's just, we just...
Obviously, wait till I was even more established, we've got more reach, then we'll let you know when we're ready for you to zero.
To like come in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something we'd want to do. And it would probably be in conjunction with the magazine. Yeah. So a lot of kind of looking at topics we've discussed and like just analysing those and getting people's commentary, like following that, because you know the stories go out and then people engage with us and oh, this is a really good read, blah 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 blah, and then we have like sit down meetings and catch ups with people in the industry and they're like, oh, I read this comment from this person and I really disagreed with that, blah blah blah, we should have that on a podcast.
Yeah.
Like it really should
really good engagement.
Yeah, so that is definitely something on the cards. Just hasn't happened yet. Mm. Again, we don't want to expand the business so much that we are not constantly enhancing what we offer. Oh. It's one of those things where you can't walk before you run or run before you walk, whatever. You just want to make sure that you're getting each thing perfect. And I feel like we've done that with the publications we've got. So it is definitely time to start innovating and adding those sorts of things. And actually, because we're recruiting for a new team, someone actually talked to you yesterday. She was really into podcasts. So, that would be great.
She's space.
Yeah.
Cool. And then I guess let's end on question number 5, which is, what are the big things in the market you're positive about? What's the good news? I mean, in a time that you kind of mainly doom scroll and everything, can be quite negative. I guess bridging's quite different because mainly it's nice stories. But what are you really positive about?
Yes.
Nick, what do you have to say on that?
It can be. I mean, bridging is extremely useful tool, as we all know. And, with pricing that's gone down. I mean, like when I started in 2012, 2013, if you got 1% a month, you're winning. Now, if a broker gets quoted 1%, they're almost slamming the phone down on you.
Yeah.
So in terms of winning, I think people have won out of the product because it's become almost, it is now effectively a mainstream price product. I think the bridging loans are only as good as the way out anyway, right? Anyone can lend on the property, but how lenders, borrowers and brokers conduct themselves once it's time to exit, that's when you know whether the loan's been a good news story or not. On the way in, my opinion.
Very true. I mean, we ran a story in our magazine in the issue before last, the November-December issue, all about step rates, which I think kind of ties in quite nicely with that, really about, should brokers be paid half at the completion time and half when they exit, to show that they actually stayed with the client the whole time?
No, because they want the extension fees and the fee, all the fees on the way in. That means they're doing themselves out of fees. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah.
Sorry, broker. I was a broker, so I can speak from experience.
Yeah, so those sorts of things, those kind of debates we like to have. We want to make sure that, we are holding people to account. And this goes back to what the role of media is in our space. It's really promoting and encouraging transparency in a largely unregulated space. So, there's no bar to entry in our market.
Exactly.
And sometimes, we see lenders or we meet lenders and we're like, do they know what they're doing? And it really is to make sure that there is maximum transparency, there is treating customers fairly, and we are holding people to account if there's things we know about. I think the struggle we have is that brokers can be fickle and they can, call us up and say, oh, we've heard this lender's doing this, and have a complaint. Probably 9 times out of 10, there's not really anything to it. There's no story, really.
Had a bad experience on one particular case.
Exactly. And there were multiple people to blame or whatever the case was. But then there's one that, and you're like, actually, that's definitely something, and then you investigate into it. And I think our job is to make sure that we're getting those definitely. 1 out of 10 and making sure that we're bringing it to light, so that brokers who are new to the space, especially, they know what questions to ask lenders. And we talked about funding earlier. That's one of the main questions to ask. How are you funded? Is it committed? How do you charge certain fees if they need an extension? How do you treat your customer? Do you work with them, especially in development finance? Right now, so that's for a broker. We try and push that kind of what questions you should be asking, how you should be conducting yourself, even though it's in an unregulated market. There's so many things to look out for, and if you're in it for the long term, you're not gonna retain your clients if you're not asking those questions, because your clients probably they might get themselves into a bad situation. Yep. So,
agreed. Yeah.
I don't know if that answered your question. I think we just waffled on something else. Sorry. Good
positive
news.
News.
Good
news.
We don't even breathe this industry. We could talk about it all day long.
I know.
How sad we are, but it is what it is. The life we chose.
Exactly. But good news. I think the industry is really starting to turn a corner in terms of diversity and inclusion. That's something we've really been pushing. I don't know if you saw the AMY report last year on that. That was really eye-opening and shows, you know, we still do have an issue here. We're very, our editorial guidelines, and especially we do the same thing with our freelancers, we have to make sure that we've got a diverse panel on all of our events, make sure we have diverse, you know, judges for our awards, and also with commentary on articles. So it's a big thing for us to make sure that we're trying to be, you know, we're trying to be as inclusive as possible. And it is difficult to get people to, you know, get the right people on, because, you know, sometimes they don't give media, some companies don't give media training to all of their team, or their senior team. They'll just give it to one person, like the CEO or the MD, who, you know, 8 times out of 10 is generally a man. So we want to make sure that we're promoting diversity as much as we can, and we kind of have to force the hand a little bit to do that.
Are companies giving media training in our industry?
Yeah.
Interesting.
In the market for some, Nick?
No.
I think you guys have got it covered.
I don't think I need it.
James is saying, yes, you need it.
No comment. Because I'm trained.
A step.
Yep. 10 podcasts. That's all you need.
All you need. That's it.
Well, I think that's good. Any more? Any more?
What's going to be new for you guys in terms of like what you're doing? Obviously, your podcast is successful and you're doing a lot of them, but what's next?
Nick's going to be on more videos, definitely from my perspective. We're going to increase our general
Video content's going to go up.
Nice.
Definitely. Yeah. And more regularly, more of this. We've got some new, we're constantly looking at new money, new products for us. Can we do things differently? Mm-hmm. I think you will see something different from us very, very soon.
Okay.
Watch this space. I can't reveal just yet, but it will come out very shortly. But I'm quite excited about this. A little bit different. I'm quite interested to see the market's reaction as well.
I'm sure we'll have a chat when the microphones are off.
Patonche. What else? Just more of the same. I think we do things our own way. You know, we'll still walk around in our hoodies. We still do our tab thing. You know, we'll just keep being ourselves, I think. And that's what's differentiated us in this market. Look, it's an extremely competitive and saturated market. Yep. I always say that. And to break the mold and try and break into the larger round territory of lenders in our space is not an easy feat to do, because the big boys are still playing and they're still always going to have cheaper money than you. When someone's a decade ahead of you in our industry, and if they're still going, they're probably doing the right things, which means people, you know, there is a lot of liquidity. You know, there was never money from the US in our industry 5-10 years ago. It didn't exist. But for the US, you know, big banks, investment banks, to be throwing, you know, one lender's taking £500 million, another's taking £200 million, very cheap rates. How restricted those funding lines are, it doesn't really matter. The bottom line is they're all here to play.
Yeah.
So for us, we've just got to keep our innovation going, because it's what has allowed us to break, whether it's the mold or whether it's break into market share. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie, COVID has probably worked in our favour. I know it's a, you know, contentious point to say it's something that caused so many people misery, but ultimately, there are a lot of lenders stopped lending or paused. Mm-hmm. You know, we had an opportunity where we were small enough and nimble enough that we could then decide to move forward. But it allowed us to be innovative at a time where it wasn't just lend and compete with everyone else. It was, right, what can we do differently to now differentiate ourselves, to take some market share, and then continue along that path whilst also growing and lending.
Yep.
And I think that's what's got us to where we're going, and I think we'll continue along that path and just keep growing with it.
Have you been attracting a kind of different audience in terms of, you know, clients and brokers? Because I talked a little bit about, you know, attracting a younger demographic. Have you been doing that because of kind of how you promote yourselves?
That's a difficult one to say. I don't know, because ultimately we are looking to speak to as many brokers, offer our product to as many people as possible, just like everyone else. Mm. I think when it comes to just having BDMs and sales teams on the road, I don't think that will ever change that much, because ultimately people will deal with people they like, and it's a relationship game, as you mentioned before. But I certainly think I do get a lot of comments from people saying, saw this video, saw that video, saw the video of your office the other day, would love to come and see it, which has now given us a massive opportunity, by the way, to save time and people to come to us for meetings.
Yeah, oh my God.
So,
well, I've seen your office. It's amazing.
Yeah, and obviously we get breakfast and lunch every day if anyone wants to come down, right? Save me some travel time. You have a free breakfast or lunch
and
at our
3
office.
And at 3 p.m. there's snacks.
There is. Amazing. All made by a chef.
I'm waiting for the summer party invite.
Yeah. And, you know, it's in a great event space. Mm. You know, that all adds to who we are, our character. Not, you know, the office is a great place to be.
Yeah.
And we've created a good atmosphere, and I think that atmosphere, I hope, transmits over on the phone when we're dealing with our clients and our customers and brokers and everyone else. And then I got random property people I've known over the years going, saw you won this award, saw you on this video, saw your office, saw your this. I didn't know this about you with your podcast. I'm like, I didn't even know you consumed our content.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what gives me satisfaction.
Yeah.
That actually there are people listening, you don't even know listening, not actually engaging.
Yeah.
Nice that they did engage a little bit more on the platforms.
Like, subscribe, comment.
Exactly. But I think overall we must be doing something right if people will come up to you randomly and say, saw this,
yeah.
didn't know this,
definitely.
That was interesting. Keep it going. So
how do you guys consume your news? I know you asked me earlier, but that's quite interesting.
I'd say mine's mainly from LinkedIn and then through news from the inbox. I'd sort of look at the kind of headlines and then anything that
I'll
read.
Is this for industry-related news?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What about personal news? Both. Where do you get your industry news?
Instagram.
Don't say BNC, I'm out the door. So.
No, well, I did get it. Normally, because I get the email from you guys that pops up.
Yeah.
Click straight away, I'll click the link and find out what's going on. That was on your website this morning.
I actually read The Week. And
The Week?
That's my news. I like it.
The Week podcast is awesome.
Yes, it's so good.
It's amazing.
It?
Yeah,
so
I love it.
Cool. I won't say where else I get my news from the industry because it'd be unfair to have you on this podcast and name and shame others, obviously. I won't offer them that plug. This is your plug. But general news, I consume actually from Instagram, if I'm honest with you.
Do you?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm not on Facebook anymore. More so because, not by choice. 15 years of my Facebook got wiped out while my wife was messing around with her company site on my Facebook.
I'm not sure. I
Facebook shut
that.
It down, delete, and then because I didn't reactivate it in 2 weeks, the whole thing got deleted. So I no longer have Facebook. Actually, I'm not that bothered about it.
I kind of wish that mine is.
I'm actually quite delighted it's happened.
Yeah, because do you not get those posts like every
10 years ago?
Yeah, and it's like, 10 years ago you said this, and you're like, oh God, no,
yeah.
Did I?
And did I look like that as well? Yeah. A bit cringe.
Yeah, it's a little.
Particularly when I first was on Facebook, it was all about posting, and like my friend would be sat next to me, I'd be like, hey, sat next to you.
Yeah, it was an update. Why were we giving updates? It was like Twitter, but on Facebook. It was terrible.
Do you know what
really
it's about 10 years ago? Stephen Wasserman sent me a picture last week, or 3 or 4 pictures of me from West One 10 years ago. I think 9 or 10 years ago. I just can't believe how young I look. I thought I was aging.
Can we get them on the pod?
Yeah, come on, let's see.
I thought I was aging quite well.
Need to put this up on the screen as well.
Stephen, thank you for this. Hold on. Got to turn airplane mode on.
Uh-oh. We're not going to lose Nick to 45 minutes of emails and
yeah, sorry,
other
guys.
Calls.
Just had a deal coming. Here we go.
It is cringe.
Oh my God.
You can see me in some. Where's the nearest camera? That one?
Yeah. Wait, are you on the.
Not the taller one, not the schnit.
Nick!
That's not even bad.
Amazing.
Well,
I won't show you the worst one.
I think anyway, we'll wrap it up there before we see any other weird pics of Nick.
Yeah, I'm not going to show any. So
that's a bit fun.
Thank you both. Thanks, Beth, for joining us. It's been really, really interesting and good to get to know you a little bit more.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Nick, as always.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and hope to see you next time. As mentioned, don't forget to like, subscribe and share. And if you want to come and join me next week, let me know.
Tab you.
Tab you.